All right, and we are back for another episode of the Galvanize and Restore podcast. I hope you really enjoyed last week's episode with Adrienne Morris, and she is back today for part two on vulnerabilities. We're just going to jump right in and continue the conversation we had last week. I hope you enjoy. Sit back and definitely get some, you know, some time for yourself, just because this episode does have a lot of conversation on different types of abuse a child or people may go through, and specifically in Broward County, but it can happen anywhere. So definitely here's a trigger warning that there are conversations related to drugs, sex, and the commercial sex industry. So just a heads up, this episode may not be for young ears, so definitely be aware of who is around you while you are listening. Hope you enjoy and sit back and learn with me, as I've learned so much from Adrienne, and I definitely had to take a lot of notes. She does go through a lot of different ways that children are affected in foster care and some solutions as well.
People have made up in their minds what they think foster kids are. And what a foster kid is like your child being removed because you weren't able to do what the state expects you to do as a parent. That child has done nothing. Yet that child experiences, you know, all the stigmas that people create in their mind. Mm-hmm. And then they have to live a life under these labels that people have put on them. And it limits the opportunities that they have. It limits people's understanding for them. In schools, even, you know, you find that they get treated differently by the teachers because they're a foster kid. You know, now there are a lot of educators who really have a heart and have a true understanding. But just like in all of the population, right, there's always the percentage of those. No matter what circle of people you put together, there's going to be a percentage that, you know, are just ridiculous for no reason. And so there is that percentage of teachers, right? And so they will treat them less than. Mm-hmm. They will make them feel small.
So most, from my understanding of what you're saying, teachers do know who's a foster child, like, mm-hmm. in the classroom. Is that because it's like mandated by the state?
Well, there's a lot of things that, number one, a lot of times removals happen at school. It's a safe environment for removal. Because they're not in the presence of, you know, the abuser. They have an opportunity to speak with them safely without there being judging eyes, without them feeling scared to tell the truth and things like that. Sometimes they're being pulled out of class for like therapy, or they're having to go to court, you know, different things like that. Guardian ad litems are coming for them. So, you know, there's
with all that.
Yeah, there's a knowledge and an understanding.
Basically, they know, oh, okay, there's something going on here. But I could totally see how, because of that, they're treated like, oh, you know, this person has an issue kind of thing.
And there's also nobody to stand up for them. Like, not in consistently, because again, they're moving at school. So you got this foster parent this semester, they have the time to come. You got this foster parent the next semester who is doing their best to manage the other three foster kids in the home, and their one bio kid, and they can't make it to your open house because they had this open house and that open house. You got this foster parent where they had to work, and you know what I'm saying? So it looks very different than a committed family member who's going to stand up for you and who's going to fight for you, who's going to question why you're being diagnosed with certain things, who's going to ask why are you falling behind this year when last year you were ahead of your class, who, you know what I'm saying? It just looks really different.
So it makes me think about the vulnerabilities of not having a teacher who cares, right? Because if the teacher, because teachers catch things, right?
They're students, like, the biggest part. That was the hard thing about COVID. Kids weren't going to school, so it wasn't being seen, it wasn't being reported. And then on the other side, like, towards, like, once COVID was going for some time, huge intake of not so much kids coming into care, but the ones who were being hospitalized because of abuse and stuff, because there wasn't a teacher who caught it, because they nobody knew what was going on behind closed doors.
And do you think that teachers need more education in regards to just how to have that trauma-based information? Like,
that would be amazing. That was actually a conversation we had, because one of my RAs, one of the residential advisors, was previously a teacher.
Okay.
And they said when they first took the first training here at 4Kids, they were like, if I had this as a teacher, it could have just helped me understand and helped me like better relate to my kids and know that when I saw certain behaviors, to know like what it was, where it was coming from.
Yeah.
And then how to like work with that child, how to communicate with them, you know, knowing there's all these things that we learn, right? That some things you can put into place immediately. And our trainings are actually, most of them are available online, like we're doing.
Okay.
And so it's free. Like anybody in the community can sign up and do virtual trainings with
What's
us.
What's the website?
On this stuff, 4kids.us.
Okay.
And it's EPIC, E-P-I-C, our EPIC trainings. And so that's available by video. And I mean, if only educators had these, you know, trainings. And some of them are developed by us, but a lot of them is widespread understood trainings for trauma. It's just
like evidence-based
exactly
trauma, training.
Exactly. And it would be so beneficial, because when you see a behavior as a teacher and it's disrupting your class and you're frustrated and you've got the rest of your class and maybe they're, you know, like you're, a lot of times you're focusing on the behavior, right? Mm-hmm. But that's a difference in like the therapists who, like some Christian therapists and therapists who work with us, is that when it's trauma-based, you're not trying to work with the young person, the child, on their behaviors. You're working on the traumas, you know, and that's what ultimately changes things. And that's what brings
that's
healing.
Huge.
Because it's sad to hear like, oh, the brain changes and all these things happen. But the truth is, and the hope is like that we have, is that we know that in doing things differently, like healing can happen. And then their brain starts to work more like a normal brain, you know, over time as they experience healing by dealing with the trauma and not the behavior.
Yeah. Because I even remember in first grade, we had a situation where someone was a little hot-headed. He wanted to throw the desk.
Right.
So they evacuated the whole. Yeah. So like that was in first grade. So we were what, like 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They evacuated us into the hallway. And then he was, you know, kind of there. I think security came, but they let him kind of be isolated by himself. And then he was disrupting. This kid actually lived in my neighborhood down the street from me. So I actually knew him.
Mm-hmm.
But at that age, I knew we ended up going to the same middle school. So I don't know everything that happened in his life or anything, but it makes me think back, because I even remember in first grade being taken out of the room, right? Because someone's disrupting. So for me as a kid, I'm like, oh, he's just, you know, having a bad day. Not, you know, as
right.
a sixth grader, that's how I see it. So I imagine, like, as a teacher, though, it's like my whole class is just being disrupted right now.
Right.
Like, it's a whole period, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a huge opportunity for teachers if they're educated on this is coming from a place of hurt
right.
for this child. Because no child just wants to disrupt the class. And, you know, it could be something that happened to him the night before
right.
or the, you know, whatever it is. But another point on that with the teachers is that they're literally with students for 8 hours, right?
Right.
Or is it 7 hours?
I don't know. It's a
seven
long
hours.
Day, I'm sure.
It's a long, you know, especially the elementary kids, right?
Right?
So they're with them and they're able to observe them so much more than even parents, right? Because they're
exactly.
They're, with
they're spending
them
more
with,
waking hours with
yes.
their educators.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's insane. That would be great. I don't know what the training is. I know they have DCF trainings that they
mm-hmm.
do for awareness. But I think that whole trauma aspect is huge.
Right.
Because there is a lot of labeling in school.
And just to like end that, not just the teachers, but the schools in general, because you know what your perspective
yes.
is. We can consider what the teacher's perspective is. Imagine him. Because now you've been isolated.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now they're bringing in security.
Yeah.
Does the security look like the police officers who maybe you had a bad experience with in your home when you were removed, or the police officers who you saw come and take away a family member, like, and the trauma that that brings? And we see it in the news sometimes, like, they will handcuff kids who are having these, like, yeah, outbursts and behaviors. Yeah. So now you have the trauma and the fears that are associated with, now I'm being handcuffed and taken by the police.
Yeah.
Versus, like, if there was a trauma trained therapist at the school, or a trauma chain teacher who could sit down and look you in the eye and say, I see you're having a really hard time. Yeah. I want to be here with you and help you. Can you tell me, like, what's going on?
Yeah.
You know, like something that simple.
Because I think people are afraid. If you don't mm-hmm. know about trauma,
right,
you become afraid of the person.
Right.
Because you're like,
you don't know what it's going to cause them to do.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But that aspect of a counselor coming in is like a miracle for some people, because I even would be like, how do you do it? You know, as a mm-hmm. therapist, like, how do you come in and just calm this situation down? Mm-hmm. It reminds me of a school shooter situation where a kid came into the school and he, you know, everybody was kind of alerted, but the person in the principal's office, or in the first office that he went mm-hmm. to, the lady was actually able to calm him down mm-hmm. to the point where he didn't harm anyone.
Amen.
And it's an amazing situation where it goes to show, if you're able to have that conversation mm-hmm. and see that person for who they are.
Right.
And we're talking about kids. We're not even talking children. About grown adults.
Right.
Talking about little kids who are, you know, in themselves innocent. They don't know how to vent, you know, right. communicate what's happening.
Right.
So in what other ways do you think that vulnerabilities, like children, are crying out? Because that's kind of how the behavior is. It's a cry for help.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times it's just the lack of relationship. They feel very isolated in their experiences. We, even like if you think about teenagers who you know, right? Teenagers who go to your church, when you look at youth groups, they have their little groups, their crew yeah. who they hang out with. They're always texting. They're always talking. They have connections, human connections, people who they feel like they have shared experiences with. Yeah. These kids who find themselves being trafficked, right? They're ashamed to talk about it. So you don't have a crew of friends mm-hmm. who you can talk to about this, because who are you going to be that vulnerable to? Who are you going to yeah. expose that to and you feel safe, right? Do you expose it to an adult and then that adult thinks that it's a cry for attention? Or that adult says, you know, well, your behaviors are like so out of control. Well, you probably wanted this or you brought this on. Or are you getting involved in like trafficking and everything because you've been sexually abused in your own house? We have had residents that the person who got them involved in trafficking was their parent.
Wow.
So when you're a 10, 11 year old girl and your mom is trafficking you, or when you're a 13-year-old
and
boy.
And that's happening here in Broward,
that's
right?
happening here in Broward County. You're a young man and you were drugged by an uncle who then, you know, sexually abused you. All of a sudden, your outlook just on adults in general looks different. Mm-hmm. How do you trust anybody? How do you share your hurts and your pains with them? And then all this is bottled up inside. And so now you are that person having the outburst and everything, or you're the person shying away and never communicating anything. Everything's buried deep within, you know, and you're isolating yourself and yeah. you're in the only community that you do have. You isolate yourself.
And there's like a spiritual aspect of that.
Absolutely. Because the enemy
shame.
Will just continue to lie to you about your worth or lack thereof. He will lie to you about what's going to happen if anybody finds out. He'll lie to you about what your future looks like. It becomes a defining moment for them in their lives until truth is spoken, you know, until they have ears to hear, until they are surrounded by those who love the Lord and recognize them to be the least of these
yeah.
and they just love on them, until there's compassionate people who understand, because there are a lot of people who will judge them for what their experiences have been that were no fault of their own. That's
Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So when people hear about those who are being trafficked, right? We talked about this a little bit off air earlier about how most people envision, you know, a teenager, adult women, without understanding how they got there. And I can say, even in our community, I went to a training. This was a couple years ago. There is a local club for men. A strip club, yes. So adult entertainment, a place for adult entertainment. And what we learned, and it's so crazy how the justice system sometimes is handcuffed themselves with what they can and can't do. I was mind blown by this. We learn about this strip club where it is known that there is a gentleman who is bringing in most of these people. They're being trafficked. They have been tricked into coming there. And their experience looks like this. They live outside of our community, so they don't know what's going on here with trafficking. And to be fair, people who live here don't know what's going on. But people who live outside of the state, they put out these ads about opportunities to move here for these different jobs. They prey on single moms. They bring them, they get them, you know, and then they bring them in. Like, the grooming that happens, it starts from when they're children all the way to adults, where they're brought in and you think that, like, oh, I have this opportunity. And then you meet the person and then they want to develop a romantic relationship with you. And they talk to you about how they can provide for you and for your kid and all these things. And they kind of get you in this place a month, 2 months in, where you find yourself drugged up. You find yourself handcuffed, and them bringing in people, you know, where they're your clients now, right? And you're isolated. And then they record things and they say, if you say something, this will be posted. This is going to be shared with your family. This is going to be shared with your child's father.
And they're completely,
completely unaware. They come into this. And we know this is happening in a place not very far from here, right? This is what was happening at that time. My hope and prayer is that it is no longer. And they also would take their kids and say, like, when they separated them, like, because once you're drugged and you're out of your mind, things are happening that you have no control over.
Yeah.
And you're not voluntarily being drugged. Yeah. You were just somebody trying to make a better way for your family. And you had no idea that this is what you were walking into. And so they take their kids, they'll register them at a different school with a different parental name so that you don't have access. And they get you an apartment and they say, this is where you have to live if you want to be with your kid. And then now you have to work at this place.
And that's
terrifying. And they knew it was happening, and they knew that this one particular person had like six women in this situation, and they were still trying to build a case. And while they're trying to build a case, this is continuing to happen. You know what I mean? And it's so sad when, like, and so that's like an adult woman who you would think she knows better. She should do this. She has opportunities. But when fear comes into play, we know how the enemy will use fear to cripple us. He will use fear to make us limited on what we think our options and opportunities are. And then you get to a place like most people where you just kind of accept where you're at. Not because you think it's okay, but you can't see your way out. That's an adult woman who can't see her way out. Imagine being a child whose parent is doing this to them.
Yeah.
Imagine being a child whose teacher or whose like a supervisor at a job, a situation where there's a supervisor at a job had everybody over and does something like this to them. You walk into these situations not knowing that that's what's coming next, you know?
Yeah.
And as a child, like, if this is the adult who, like, is your caregiver, the one who the Lord entrusted you to care for you, to love you, to raise you, to treat you as his, that's the person that's at the hands of this that's happening to you.
Yeah.
So then what?
And then how do you get out of that? About a child that's how old?
I'm talking about little kids. This is like elementary, and it's not just girls. It is not just girls. Young men are being trafficked as well. When we talk about the numbers for trafficking, those who have been trafficked, 70% of them at some point were in foster care. Right. That speaks to the vulnerability of just being a foster kid when there's no one who's like asking the questions about why you're coming in at this time. There's no one who wants to know, how is it that you have your nails done? You didn't have money. Right. Oh, you have new bags and new clothes. Where did that come from? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Those kinds of things are happening when they're like, you know,
there's no one involved on a normal basis.
Right. Especially if you're moving around house to house.
Yeah.
Group home to group home. And you can lie and say like, oh, I was with my uncle. I was with my cousin. I was like, nobody really knows because they're not that connected. So that's the ones who are being trafficked. There's a stat from, I think it was 2019 that said 100% of those who are trafficking people have had sexual abuse in their history.
Hmm.
So when something like sexual abuse has been normalized, why would you see it as something wrong?
Mm-hmm.
if that is normalized to you, if you are a child and you've been sexually abused for more than a decade, I was talking with somebody just this week, from 12 to 23, she was trafficked.
Wow.
From 12 to 23. That is such a, that is how you create a normalcy, mm-hmm. right? When it's, this is all that you know.
Yeah. That's like foundational years.
What makes it wrong? It's kind of like kids in care who have seen domestic violence. If that's what you've always seen in your home, what makes that wrong to you? That's mm-hmm. normal.
It's like you develop these habits and these mm-hmm. cycles of normalcy.
Right.
And then tying that to spiritual things, we know that there's a lot of what we call bondage, mm-hmm. where it could be like mental, like insecurity. There's just so much going on. Like we as people, we have, as I think it was C.S. Lewis, he said, you're a soul, you're not a body. Like you mm-hmm. have a body, right. but you're a soul. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like all these things that are happening to a child affects their yes. whole personhood, mm-hmm. right? Because kids are in themselves without even anything, their age, they're vulnerable, they're helpless, they don't know anything about the right. world. They have to be taught, right?
Right.
And so now you're mentioning the story of like at 12 years old, that's
And they start much younger than that yeah. sometimes, honestly. But it's like, okay, think of it this way. If you have a niece or a nephew and or maybe a couple of nieces and nephews and their siblings. So first you come into foster care, right? And then you're separated from your siblings. So maybe you came into foster care because the parent was dealing with an addiction. So your older sibling is the one who's always looked out for you, always taking care of you, like... Mm-hmm. First of all, that sibling didn't get to be a child.
Yeah.
They had to be irresponsible. But now that's who you look to. You go into care and you get separated from them. So that sibling is experiencing a loss like a parent. Like, I don't know what's going on. I can't find them, whatever. They also are not in the mindset of being able to be a child, right? right? Yeah. And so they're experiencing like everything that comes with that. Now you're separate from them and you've lost your parent. You've mm-hmm. lost the person, your sibling, who's always taking care of you. Yeah. You've lost whatever security that gave you. And then now you're with strangers and you don't know right from wrong, left from right, because in your house, it was okay that your parents were in the room fighting and that there was violence. And it was okay that you had, you know, drugs in your home and your sibling just told you don't touch those. Like these things were normal to you. Like, just imagine if that was a child in your family. Mm-hmm. Now they're living with strangers who expect them to sit to the table and eat dinner. They may have never done that before. We have a resident who experienced a birthday. So like I said, when they're 18, they have to move out on their birthday. Mm-hmm. They experienced a birthday. In our program, every Tuesday night, we do fellowship night, right? So we tell them all in their interviews, you don't have to be, you know, you don't have to share our faith for us to serve you. We serve whoever needs to be served. That looks like boy, girl, LGBTQ, straight. That looks like, you know, don't speak English. Whatever it looks like, whoever needs to be served, that's mm-hmm. who we serve,
yeah.
right? So then you move into our home and you're surrounded by these people who immediately are probably overwhelming you with love and yeah. like attention, right? You don't understand this.
Yeah.
And so then Tuesday night comes and our volunteers, like we have volunteers in our program, and this is one way that they first connect with our young adults, is coming to the home on the Tuesday nights. Those who can commit to serving like every week, they come into the home on the Tuesday night and they're there to break bread together. They're there to have a meal. And then there's like a Bible study or a devotion or something fun. So you show up to our home a couple of days later. This is Tuesday night, right? And we're all at this table. We've decorated the home. We brought you a cake. And she's literally sitting there in silence. And she's like overwhelmed. And she's like, I never sat to a table to eat a meal with my family before. You were 18 years old.
Wow.
Can you even consider that for your family? Like, we take it for granted. Oh, you know, yeah. there are so many, and like, oh, kid gets frustrated. They run off. They go to the room. You yeah. let them eat in the room every now and again or something.
Or
but maybe Sunday, yeah. everybody's eating together. Mm-hmm. Or you're going out to a restaurant. Everybody's eating together. She had never sat into the table and eaten, and she found it so awkward and weird. And then when they came out, like, afterwards with the birthday cake to, like, surprise her, she couldn't have taken more than, like, you know, less than like 100 pictures because she was so, oh. And we give her the thing to like cut the cake and she was like, what am I supposed to do? Oh, I immediately turn to the side because I'm crying and the RA is looking at me crying. And so we're like, you have to cut your cake. And she's like, I've never cut a birthday cake before. Like that just happened. This is not like a one-off.
And that's
this is
here. Something I want to say this again. This in is Broward here County. In Broward. Here in America.
Here's a real stat for you. Yeah. There are more kids that, there are more churches in Broward County than kids that come into care. If every church did what the Lord told us to do and had just one family stand up and say, I will open my home. I will be family for this child who doesn't have family. That's all it would take. We wouldn't have kids in shelters. We wouldn't have kids in group home settings. That's all it would take. You want to talk about a pregnancy rate number going down because you have people speaking life into you, helping you understand the importance of like taking care of yourself and valuing yourself so you don't become an object to someone else.
Yeah.
Like you want to talk about like the numbers of them that would graduate from high school.
How many don't graduate?
Let me, kind of remember the stat. I don't remember the stat right now, but it's pretty high. I think I want to say it's like 60% don't graduate. Less than 10% do any type of post-secondary education. And then it's like, it's like 4% who will go on to college and less than 2% who will actually achieve.
And that's a wrap. So this was a wonderful conversation. There's so much that Adrian was able to share, and you know, the conversation's actually not finished just yet. We have more in store for next week. I hope you take time for yourself and definitely consider how you can be involved with 4Kids in Broward, or if you are located in other areas around the state, they do have different locations for volunteering. 4Kids is not the only organization that's working in the foster care system, but that is the one I'm right now connected with, and I'm personally volunteering with them. So I definitely rate them as people who are really involved, and they're the heart and the core of the love that they have towards these children and families is amazing. Witnessing it firsthand, they're so enthusiastic with the work that they do, and in this dark sphere of work, basically dealing with abuse and trauma, it's very challenging to stay in the fight. And a lot of people who work with 4Kids have been there for a long time, and so it's something that just shows how much they really believe in the mission, that there is a way to restore the years that the locusts have stolen. That's what the Bible says in Job, I believe. There's, you know, it's in reference to there's things in life that sometimes take away from our life, right? Maybe it's a year of loss, a month of loss, you know, loss opportunity or whatever. And children in foster care definitely experience a lot of loss. They experience a lot of setbacks, as you can hear from our conversation so far. And we do believe that God can restore those times, the years that were stolen. But it does take a lot of work. It takes a lot of hands-on, and it takes commitment and perseverance, a positive attitude. And it's valuable to be a part of the work that 4Kids is doing. And if you're connected to a church or any other organization that is committed to working with foster families or 4Kids, I would definitely love to hear from you and listen to other organizations that are doing this type of work as well. So stay tuned for next week's episode, and I hope you have a lovely day, evening, wherever you're located. See you next week. Bye.